Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Lakota origin story says the American bison sacrificed his own body to sustain the first people. In his new exhibit at the Center for Western Studies, artist Jerry Fogg seeks to honor the buffalo sacrifice by preserving Lakota oral histories. 11 Degrees of Tatanka is on display through May 24th in the Madsen Nelson Ellman Galleries of the Fantal Building on the Augustana University campus in Sioux Falls. There is an artist reception with Jerry Fogg this Friday from 5:30 to 7:30 local time. And Jerry joins us now in the Kirby Family Studio at South Dakota Public Broadcasting here in Sioux Falls. Jerry, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for allowing me to be here.
We had such a wonderful time. Producer Steve Zwemke and I went to the exhibition yesterday, and to just sit in that space for a while, it was so just fabulously done. So first of all, highly recommend people going. I want to talk about the gallery installation area first. And is that, did you plan the artwork for the space? Tell us how this, you know, this exhibition sort of came about.
Well, there's certain legends that are really known to a lot of people. Such as White Buffalo Calf Woman, which I led with out in the major first area. And then I just kind of tried to include the size of walls to allow to the matching dual buffalo skulls that were there. But the center was planned completely because it is the four directions of our people, which is north, west, south, and east. And that was the only place in the gallery that has four facing walls to allow me to set that up in that direction.
Tell us a little bit about your planning process and what what you decided to include, and then let's talk a little bit about the buffalo skulls and the hides and the different elements that to help people kind of get that visual experience here on the radio of what they're going to see.
Well, unfortunately, this show it just touches on the culture of our people.
Right.
It is nowhere near even complete. And what I tried to install with what I had was things that I have collected over the years and the experiences that I've had myself with the culture to where I can actually speak about these things, you know. There's so many different versions of each individual piece of artwork that I've done, but the elders tell me that all the stories are correct. There's never a wrong story unless, of course, it's a bad one, which we don't allow to speak of that. But yeah, it has been planned over the years, at least about 10 years that I've had this in my mind to do this. And finding a gallery that allows that to happen was kind of a little partial problem too. Mm-hmm. But at Augustana, their Center for Western Studies, they are great people. They just, without a doubt, come on in, they said.
And there's this notion, too, I'm thinking in particular of the area that deals with star knowledge and the interpretation, you know, the writing that you have next to the art, in the sense that, you know, we live in this world where it's so easy to be detached from even the night sky, even to be and the larger metaphor of being attached from tradition and from knowledge and from stories themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because of our screens and how, you know, how easy it is to sort of block out that experience, those barriers. Talk a little bit about some of the barriers to, standing in those stories, to hearing them, to hearing the oral histories from elders and to living in a way that honors those stories today.
Well, long, long ago, as they would say, there was no written language. It was all vocal. Stories were told around the campfire to the young, and the young grew up finding themselves telling the young themselves. And the star knowledge, it is, you know, as the scientists have proven to us, it takes hundreds of thousands of years for the light and knowledge to get to Mother Earth. But what I was told and what I've been taught is that the star knowledge of old, long ago, is installed in the young and all of us already. So our feelings come about the knowledge of stars within us, born with us, and live with us. And what we do in our lives and learn lessons, as they say, you know, you learn as you live, is what the star knowledge is about.
So is it more about not learning the next thing, but really just removing barriers to what you already have access to?
Opening doors and education, for instance. marriage, you know, going into life's things that you do, getting a job, working hard, you know, that's the experiences that you experience in life, and that knowledge is among that.
Tell me about you as an artist, because when you walk into this exhibition at the Center for Western Studies, there's the big installation, but then there's also several areas where there are framed mixed media art, you know, pieces. So talk a little bit about yourself as a mixed media artist.
Well, I get a little bit radical sometimes when it comes to that, because people say mixed media, and I try to prove myself in that category, and then I find somebody else is mixing watercolor with oil, and they're calling that mixed media, and that's not what I do. You know, what I do is I collect things just by sight of eye and just see them in a piece of artwork that eventually comes out to be a myth, a tale, a story, maybe actual facts in our history and what is going on today with, you know, the pipeline and whatnot, and then even going as far as possibly touching upon the future. Mm-hmm. And I use objects to try to prove this and illustrate to people to see these things. And it all fits behind glass, you know, and, you know, I talk about multi-mixed media, and a lot of people think, oh, no, this stuff's going to stick out all over the place. But I try to get it to where it always fits behind glass, and it's always one of a kind. It's never reproduced.
The framing is beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
When we talk about objects, coins, shell casings, snakeskin, mm-hmm. paper, cloth, fabric, tell us a little bit about your gathering process, your collecting process for, you know, some of those those
walking,
objects.
Yeah. Walking out in the streets, I stub my toe on something, and I'll use that. No, I look around at antique shops, convenience stores, even Benson Flea Market. You know, I go out there and I troll through everything and try to find something. And it, all of a sudden, it kind of hits me, too, to where I don't even have a picture planned. But I walk through there and I see this, and then my mind starts clicking and saying, that can pertain to Wounded Knee 1890 in a certain way. And then the process starts to flow with other things together with that piece.
Do you store? Do you just have, you know, how much, you know, so much ends up on a cutting room floor for a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. You know, how much doesn't get put in the piece that's there? Talk about that editing process and just really how much you need in order to create one of those pieces.
Well, there's been moments to where I put a piece together and I look at it and stand back and say, oh, no, some of that's got to come out, you know, overdoing it. But I have, you know, my home is full. The walls are full of casings of this and that, you know, coins here, fur there, leather here. And I just try to utilize it, but I really try not to waste anything.
Right. That's exactly how I imagined it, by the way. I was like, he has to have a system because so much is involved in each one. And I found when I stood in front of the artwork that it continued to reveal. And at some point I had to walk away from the piece knowing that I hadn't seen even a fraction of maybe what was intended in the representation or the expression, but also that when I came back there would be more. So, for example, there's a breastplate that has, you know, Vietnam service ribbons sort mm-hmm. of integrated into that. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, no, wait. And then there's this, and then there's this, and then there's this. Do those layers, talk a little bit about your relationship with the viewer or the art collector. Mm-hmm. Do you want them to have all that revealed at once? Is that a slow reveal for you? Does it matter if they don't ever see something that you sort of intended to put into the story?
It kind of excites me a little bit when somebody asks me to explain this piece to me. Yeah. So I'm standing there talking to them, and as I'm talking to them, I'm pointing out things in it, and I like it when they say, I didn't even see that. You know? Yeah. As far as the, you know, Vietnam piece, the other ribbons on the other side are from the Korean War.
I was wondering that.
It represents both, you know, elements. But, you know, I even have to explain to some people to where you have to really look into it and look closer. For instance, Star Knowledge. They look at the buffalo skull and they just see a design on the forehead. But if you look closely at that, those are all individually cut pieces of leather and put on there. And then there's the little silver diamonds that are put on the leather on top of that for the added display.
What's your process like when you're in that sort of time-consuming, there's a symmetry to it, there's a rhythm to it, there's you know, a physical intensity to it? Tell me a little bit about your creation process.
My grandma says I have a lot of patience.
Yeah.
That's basically what it takes, is a lot of patience. And then I have to have sustain myself to not overdo it.
Yeah.
Because I can very easily overdo a picture by just having so much stuff in there that as they say today, it's too busy.
Oh, see, and as a viewer, I never thought anything was too busy. So you've honed that editing process down.
Oh, yeah. I've tried to, you know, eliminate a lot of things that I could put in there. And like that, I save it for another picture.
I mentioned snakeskin. Tell us a little bit. Explain, if you will, since you said you like being asked this, the pipeline piece.
Well, it's one of the pieces that I put into being an advocate. I try to be an advocate for events of the Native American First People, as they say, like Blood Run and Peshla and of the Hiawatha Insane Asylum outside of Canton. And I illustrate those in my artwork, and by using what they said themselves, they said the pipeline is a black snake. So bing, right there, then I got to go out and get a snake and paint the scales black and put it in there because that's what it's called. I try to illustrate, you know, so you can relate to it. You know, you say, well, what's this? Well, remember they called the pipeline the black snake? Oh, yeah, okay, now I see it.
Yeah,
they understand.
When people come to the exhibition, non-natives come to the exhibition, children come to the, you know, native kids come to the, imagine yourself as a boy, sort of as a different artist, and you're you, but you're younger. You know, what do you sort of think that kid, that child, that young native kid might sort of stand in that space, and what are your hopes for him or her?
Well, being, you know, I kind of consider myself a somewhat educator for children because that's what I really like to do. And it's a kind of a teaching process. When I see these children, they go and they look at it. My hopes are that maybe they will, in time, you know, become chiefs and stuff, or, you know, stay away from art. There's no living there. Become lawyers and doctors, you know. But no, it really makes me feel good when the student comes up and looks and takes the time to understand and even ask questions and try to do that. 'Cause right now I'm being asked to do a mural in Lincoln High School.
Nice.
Along the hallway there. And in each square, we're doing a geometrical design. And in each square, we're asking the students to write down a happening among our people in the past, to where other students can come along and look at that and Google it and find out about it, instead of just having it illustrated on the wall and people look at it and say, oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. So using that language and those words as pieces of art,
mm-hmm.
as well, with the hopes of, you know, a greater conversation.
Exactly.
How did you become an artist?
Well, living out in the country, being raised out there with the elements and you know, everything being just openly free to myself, I just established that there is more to life than just looking at it. You know, a photographer looks at a beautiful scenery and then he captures it with his camera and then he can see it anytime he wants to and enjoy that. And that's the way I felt. I stood out on the countryside and looked at the beautiful countryside. And I said, geez, I wish I could look at this every day. So then I go and I put it into my artwork and I hang it on my wall, and I do have it for every day.
How did you get started learning? You know, you're self-taught, right?
Yes.
So to come to where you are today as an artist without, you know, a sort of an academic, you know, master's degree in art theory and stuff is pretty remarkable. How did you get from, who helped you?
Well, nobody really ever helped me. It was just the determination to get out of the lifestyle that I was existing in.
Mm-hmm.
I was going down the wrong road, and I was going down fast. And the only thing that pulled me out of it was just, you know, buoying up alongside the head and thinking that, okay, what am I going to do if I quit going down this wrong road? And the only thing that I was halfway good at was doing artwork. And I told myself, if I keep doing this artwork, I'll be able to travel a different road without wanting to go back. Mm. And then with art, you just keep going forward and forward and forward and going on.
Let's keep going forward. Mm-hmm. Terry Fogg, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
And you can meet Jerry this Friday, 5:30 to 7:30 Central Time at the Center for Western Studies for the exhibition. There's an artist reception there. It's called 11 Degrees of Tatanka.